But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch offseason pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
This out there now from The Athletic that the Mike Vrabel interview with the Jets is happening today.
Okay.
So they did Ron Rivera and Lewis Riddick for the GM opening yesterday. Rivera, of course, for the head coaching opening. So you've got Vrabel coming to Florham Park to visit with the Jets
today.
All right,
so here now we got to think about Mix. So right, Mike Vrabel as the head coach, who would be the GM? I still think you got to hire the GM first and make sure that whoever that person is can work with whoever the head coach is.
Or and if it's Vrabel, they say, who do you want as the GM? And we'll bring that guy in.
He may want to go back and work with Robinson, who he worked with down in Tennessee.
Did they end on good?
It was an interesting thing. A lot of people were shocked that he was fired. I was telling you, I was telling Gio yesterday, I talked to Frank Reich, who was Indianapolis, so he had to go against Tennessee.
Yeah.
And he said, man, those teams were always buttoned up. Those teams were always tough to play against, and he is a really good coach.
Yeah.
And he does command the locker room, and he's a guy that can change the culture. He can walk right in there. Guys would look at him. They know he's got the Super Bowl rings, the whole bit.
I'd be really impressed if the Jets were able to land him.
I agree.
I would be very, very impressed.
He's got to be the number one guy on a lot of boards, maybe with the exception of Ben Johnson for maybe like Jacksonville or Chicago.
Yeah, but then again, he didn't get a job last year, Vrabel.
Yeah, but was that because it wasn't available? Or because he decided, like, I know he lost out to Harbaugh with the Chargers.
Yeah.
But were there other teams maybe said, you know
sometimes
what?
Sometimes it's better to sit out. And he actually did work with the Browns this year. But it's probably better sometimes to sit out and just kind of take a big look at the league and see what's going on and then really assess what's happening. Look, the Jets have a good roster. They just don't have an answer at quarterback right now for the immediate future.
And Vrabel's kind of used to that down in Tennessee, where Tannehill was okay.
He may go in there and say, look, I'd like to have Aaron Rodgers back. I don't know. But it seems like, to me, the relationship between Woody Johnson and Aaron Rodgers seems like it's in a weird spot.
Yeah, he's not coming back.
Bad spot.
Yeah. It's just he's not coming back.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Like, if Vrabel's looking to come in and put his stamp on the culture, like a shotgun marriage with Aaron Rodgers at the end of his career doesn't seem like a good way to do that.
Coach still wants to win. He still wants to win. And every coach that takes a job in the NFL knows how important it is. All you have to do is listen to Brian Daboll's press conference after they beat the Colts, how important it is to have a quarterback that you can believe in.
So you referenced Vrabel with the Browns. So Zach Rosenblatt from The Athletic's the one that put out the news this morning about he's interviewing with the Jets today. And here's another piece from The Athletic, which this is interesting to me. He writes, over the last 5 months, I spent extensive time with Vrabel as he worked with the Browns. He reflected on his Titans tenure, opened up about what he wants next inside his gap year, in quotes. There's a big expansive piece here. I haven't had a chance to sift through it yet. But on the morning that I guess he gets this little nugget that he's going to interview with the Jets, they've got this piece about what Vrabel's been up to in this off year.
Because Todd Downing worked with him.
That's right.
He was his offensive coordinator, and then, he came here to the Jets after they got fired down there in Tennessee.
I think Todd Downing's like, you don't want to come here. Hey, Mike,
I would think that Todd Downing
somewhere else
would be talking. I'm assuming they have a very good relationship, but these coaches know. They know what's going on.
All right. Here's a refresher from yesterday. I did play this Brian Daboll cut talking about offensive coordinator Mike Kafka.
Mike's been a great teammate, good coach, good friend. Does a good job for us.
Is that you want him back next year?
Yeah, he does a good job for us. So we're focused on the Eagles here, guys.
All right, so he was like non-committal there, similar to how he, if I recall correctly, how he handled Wink Martindale at the end of last year. So now Kafka meets the media yesterday and decided to preempt anything related to that, which I thought was a little strange.
I know you guys had some questions of Dave's about like my future and all that stuff, so I just wanted to address it really quick. Obviously, I love being here. I love working for Dave's and everybody, and so... You know, my only focus really is just on Philadelphia, the coaches, the players, and getting ready to play a great game and build on what we did last week.
Like, are we really that focused on the Mike Kafka situation?
But that's all they were going to ask him about.
Okay.
So he just wanted to get ahead of it and go, yeah, I just told you what I had to say.
All right.
Because there's nothing else to ask Mike Kafka about. Tyrone Tracy's rushing attempts.
I get that. But it's just like, okay, so what if they ask you about your future? Like, what's the big deal? I don't know. It just was the way that they both handled it was, I don't know. It just seemed
For a guy who ran right to Twitter to talk about his future at WFAN.
Oh. Yes.
And you say, what's the big deal? And there's a bunch of reporters around you egging you on and trying to get you to have a quote about your future. I mean, it's easy for you to say, right?
Fair enough.
Okay.
I'm not even going to push back.
What would have happened if there were a bunch of reporters that day that you went with the in your face asking those questions, huh? What do you mean, what's the big deal? It's a big deal.
I don't think those are a direct comparison, if I'm being fair.
But it's easy to say, what's the big deal when it's not your life?
What I'm saying
your
is,
job.
Like, if they were going to, like, the fact that he... Let me get out in front of this. Like, it's some big story they're trying to manage.
Well,
that's what I'm saying.
Right, yeah. When you were posting that, were you crying?
No, I was not crying.
Like, how many people probably looked at
the steam coming out of my ears? I was angry.
I felt emotion.
I spoke to both of you that day.
Yes.
I did speak to you on the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean,
and to be clear, you did not encourage me to do that. Quite the opposite, actually.
No, exactly.
But how many people read that post and was like, what's the big deal here? Why do you feel like you need to address this on social media?
I'm sure a lot of people felt that way.
So, but the point being, for Mike Kafka, like, nobody's really even talked about him.
Yeah,
nobody has said anything. The only thing that really ever came out of any of this was that Brian Daboll was calling plays.
Right, yeah.
Kafka was still doing his job. His job was to coordinate the offense, and I'm sure he and Daboll were talking constantly during the games, during, you know, in between series, what's working, what's not working, what are they doing, how do we have to attack certain things. I mean, Kafka was still very much involved,
sure.
And if they stay here, we'll still be here.
And Vrabel did say yesterday.
He's been a very loyal employee.
Yeah, I don't think he will be here if they stay here.
So that's your, based on those two bites, that's your takeaway, mm-hmm. Yes? So that's what I mean. Like, it's like they were dancing around a little bit.
So
that's
maybe Mike Kafka wants to go somewhere else. Maybe he wants to go, maybe he has an offer to go somewhere.
Somewhere he can call plays, perhaps.
Maybe. Maybe college. Who knows?
Maybe.
And that guy, Nevitt Shapiro, already told us that the Miami offensive coordinator was going to be here with Cam Ward.
That's right.
Right. And Deion said that Shedeur Sanders was going to be here, too. Yeah, but who's right?
Did he?
Yeah.
I can't. They've all said. The Giants
have the number one pick. They're taking Shedeur. That's what he said.
Well, that's if.
Yeah. I think his point was whoever has the number one pick is taking Shedeur.
Yeah.
That's what he was getting at. Here's our guy, Mike Tomlin, ahead of Saturday night's AFC North showdown with the Bengals. Playoff implications for both teams, of course.
Certainly, they're a motivated group trying to play their way into this tournament. But certainly, we're a motivated group, to be quite honest with you. We got to get the stench of the last few performances off of us.
Yeah, smelly three-game skid against playoff-bound teams, Eagles, Ravens, and Chiefs. So let's see if they can get that squared away here coming up against
Don't need a half-ass effort. We need the whole ass. That was the best. The whole ass.
They better get George Pickens and Russell Wilson the whole ass on the same page.
I mean, this is what I mean about Russell Wilson, though, because he just teammates...
Don't like him.
No matter where he goes. And like George Pickens is the exact type of guy who ain't going to like him.
Right. And won't have a problem saying that essentially out loud.
Because Russell just comes across as not one of the guys. He seems like he's a phony. He's a celebrity who's not, you know, shoulder to shoulder in a locker room with them. And this is like the least shocking thing ever.
that they're not on the same page.
Not great timing for it, though.
I mean, they're like 300 pages apart.
Well, if you heard that clip last hour, it seemed like news to George Pickens. Because he was even thinking the reporter was trying to, you know, right. insert his own opinion in there. He's like, no, that's what Russell said. Oh, okay, that's the end of my media session. Coaching carousel obviously starting to heat up. Who's interviewing? Who's going where? Who's a good fit with a certain team or quarterback? Commanders offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury obviously having a nice year with our rookie Jaden Daniels, which leads to the obvious question. Cliff, are you interested in being a head coach again?
Yeah, I'm sure at some point. Yeah, at some point.
And then there's sort of an awkward silence before the reporter follows up, and you even hear Kingsbury kind of chuckle at the beginning of this one, almost like, of course, how could I not be?
Do you plan to interview for jobs this year?
I won't comment on that, but yeah, we'll see how everything plays out, but I'm very happy here. Yeah, this has been an awesome place and has really helped me kind of rekindle my love for the sport.
Seems like a strong yes.
Rekindle my love for the sport.
That's right. It's amazing what a quarterback does for a
everybody.
Guy.
For everybody.
I mean, like Nathaniel Hackett and Aaron Rodgers, you know, mm-hmm. the fact that he just climbed on his back and rode him to the Kentucky Derby win. You know, Adam Gase and Peyton Manning. You know, Cliff Kingsbury could not have been in a lower spot when he got fired by the Cardinals. People said he ran this loose program. He had no control over anybody. DeAndre Hopkins basically quit on him. Kyler Murray hated him. It was the worst, right? The team would quit on him every year. They'd get off to a good start, and then they'd quit, and they'd fall apart. The second he gets fired, he's posting pictures of his girlfriend's ass cheeks on a beach. Remember this? It was like Cliff Kingsbury does not give an F. About anything.
He was winning there.
And then all of a sudden, he gets back here with Jaden Daniels, and Jaden Daniels has made him into this head coaching candidate again. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Aaron Rodgers said he's got to go put his feet in the sand. Cliff Kingsbury was doing something else in the sand.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know what I'm saying? We know already there'll be no Saquon Barkley in Sunday's regular season finale. There'll be no breaking of Eric Dickerson's rushing record. But with the Giants serving as the opponent for what is really a meaningless game, I guess Saquon and the company he is endorsing felt like it was the perfect time to poke some fun at John Mara. So we did get access to that video and audio from yesterday.
I'm Saquon Barkley. I've heard you guys have some trouble sleeping lately. We got a big game coming up. You should rest up. Maybe try some Unisom. I don't need it, but you might. I'm going to sleep like a baby.
So the delivery and the acting, not great, but I think the message there and who it's delivered at is kind of clear. And there was one more, and then you can comment.
I heard some of you were having trouble sleeping, so I wrote you a lullaby. Rock-a-bye, baby, awaken your bed. As the thought of 2000 swirls in your head. It sure is tough to lose sleep over football. Not for me, though. Good night to you all.
Yeah, I mean, John Mara loves Saquon Barkley. He said all the right things about him. He had his back in all of those meetings. He's not the guy that you go and troll in these situations.
You know what? I would just say, don't touch the money. Football's a game that will come back and get you at a moment's notice. And, you know, that's got knee injury written all over it.
That's what Al said. He can't wait to see him, you know, turn an ankle or something in the playoffs or go for 6 yards rushing.
I mean, I just, you know, just be in it. To me, like, Saquon's always humble, always a very professional player.
Yeah.
This doesn't seem to jive with me.
What am I missing with the 2000 reference?
Is the amount of yards he's got?
Yeah, but. Okay.
Dreams of 2,000 yards.
I know. No, I get that. But if it's. If he's making it about John Mara and him losing sleep, like that wasn't about the 2,000 yards. It was about him leaving for the Eagles.
You know, one thing I will say, everybody.
I get it. They're wedging it in. It rhymes.
In front of him on that list, and there are seven other players that have gone over 2,000 yards. Chris Johnson's right in front of him by 1 yard.
Mm.
They all did it in, 16 games, right? I mean, most of them, if not all of them. I would think all of them did 16 games.
More rushing attempts for everyone on that list, except for Barry Sanders. He had less.
He had less rushing attempts. So yeah. Saquon has got 345 rushing attempts. Eric Dickerson had 379 rushing attempts.
Yeah. So we talk games or attempts, however you want to slice it. You know,
he had a good year.
He did.
He had a great
year. That's Saquon Barkley. Had a really good one in an Eagles uniform. You know, Al is not known for his impersonations like I am known for my impersonations, and Al was... He broke out a great one, though, this morning with as he was trying to imitate Saquon Barkley during this commercial. Al, would you like to do your Saquon impersonation?
Hey, I'm Saquon Barkley. the Giants maybe need a sleep aid. I don't need a sleep aid because I'm rushing for 2,700 yards.
I thought that was magical.
Do it really, how you did at the very beginning.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time remembering how I did it.
It was like the old man emphysema voice, yeah.
Oh, hey, Saquon. I bet you can't get to sleep. I can.
Come on.
Oh, it's so bad. I mean, it really is. I know we sound bad and we do like acting things in promos, but this is even worse. It's way worse.
Now, which did you like more? His impersonation of Saquon or the jab he took at Boomer on the warm-up show?
Oh, yeah, that is true. I mean,
what is that?
I wasn't going to bring it up. But I
you weren't?
No, I wasn't going to do it.
What did I say?
It's a feel-good football Friday. Well, I wasn't going to bring this up.
It could end in feel dead Friday here. Well, what?
I'm assuming you pulled this thing?
Fleegs did. I know he has it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, let's hear it then.
Yesterday, Boomer's like, did this season secure a gold jacket for Saquon? What are you? Are you kidding me? 1 year?
There he is.
was this year a gold jacket performance? So, I mean, was that a Hall of Fame performance for a running back? He's on a list of one of eight guys.
Yeah, for 1 year.
I said this was the performance that Dave Gettleman said you would see consistently. That when he drafted him, he said, this is who he is.
I defended you, for the record.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. There's a different version of Al from 5 to 6, yeah. You know?
Trust me, I know.
Yeah.
I'm going to go in there and smash him between 6:30 and 7.
Especially from 5 to 5:15, it's the worst. Yeah.
100%. Yes.
Yeah, it's like lancing a boil. You know, like, it's like there's this, like, big boiling, like, thing of pus. It has to be just squeezed out 5 to 5:15, then he gets it all out, then he's normal again.
He's like the pimple popper.
He is. Oh, that show. I can't watch that show. I tried watching that show.
There's a show about pimple popping now?
Oh, yes. People with
where
big
have you
old...
been? That thing's been around for about at least Dr. 7 or 8 years.
You guys, some of the reality TV you guys watch is...
I don't watch this one. I don't watch this
Some of the people that have these things, I don't know where they come from.
Yeah, I mean, it's subhuman, it feels like, you know?
Yeah,
it's, and it's just like good. Big things on their backs, and it's like bubbling, and then they...
I don't get queasy about a lot of things.
I can't watch that
one. I don't think I'd handle that very well.
Somebody, and this is what you're talking about, lancing a boil.
Yeah, well, that's what it's like with Al. Just needs to get all of it out from 5 to 5:15, then he's fine.
And he gets it out, that's for sure.
Yes,
it's his therapy session.
Yes, and he's done that the last two mornings.
Did you get into a fight with him
this morning? No fights. I've just enjoyed and laughed at his ornery nature.
Did fact check me the entire time I was yelling about Saquon Barkley.
Okay.
I was like, community notes for Al. You know, on X.
Yeah.
Just to keep him in line. Make sure we don't put too much nonsense out there. That's not true. Right?
That's true. Is that a Christmas present you're wearing?
No.
No.
I haven't worn this since they lost to the Panthers in the East Final. So I figured I better get another couple wears out of it while I can.
Yeah.
You know, Mika actually scored a goal last night. First 5-on-5 goal since before Thanksgiving.
Did you watch this whole thing last night?
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you watching the same game that I'm watching?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
The game where they should have lost,
I'll post
6-2.
Something on X and other Ranger fans will come back and talk to me. I'm like, oh, that's a great defensive play. I'm like, what? What are you watching?
I mean, there were a few mixed in, but there were also a lot of instances where the goaltender covered up for some
gaps.
You
got to be kidding me. There had to be at least 15 grade A shots.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, that's what I'm saying. They could have lost 6-2 easily.
I love Joe Micheletti. He was telling me how great Vekanainen is, whatever the hell his guy's name is. And then on the next possession, he throws the puck right out in front of the net.
I know. And it almost felt like at one point Sam was running through Ryan Lindgren's career, like he's trying to build up his trade stock.
Maybe, I don't know. And those guys are in a tough position. I get it. And they do a great job, and I love them to death. But, man.
They actually have been much more critical. Like, Micheletti, you can tell, is annoyed. I won't play it now.
He's annoyed. I'm annoyed.
Stop talking.
Shut up, Al.
He has ripped their effort, specifically on defense, numerous times now.
It is brutal. I mean, like, I don't know. Keandre Miller is like a flip away from, either a penalty or a giveaway.
Well, he did flip one into the crowd.
I know he did last night.
So yeah,
I mean, I've never seen a guy flip the puck as much as he does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like it's like panic flipping.
We're gonna have to lance a boil for Gio.
Lance a boil.
Talking about the Rangers, they did beat the Bruins 2-1. Jonathan Quick, 32 saves.
Oh my god, Jonathan Quick was amazing. Basically, last night. That was the guy that beat the Rangers in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
That version, yeah.
Yeah, playing at that level. Stanley Cup Finals.
Yes, yeah. I gotcha. All right. We played a little Aaron Rodgers on yesterday's show, assessing his time with the Jets and also reflecting on his career, whether or not it'll continue next season. So Sunday against the Dolphins could be the last NFL game we see from him. Going to take some time, though, before making any decisions.
I just need a break mentally to kind of refresh and put my feet in the sand and then see where I'm at after that.
And then even poked fun at himself a little bit when he was asked how he'll go about his decision-making process this time around. Hello?
Probably darkness again. No, I think I'm done with that. I won't be doing any darkness retreats this offseason.
How, the laughter from the media, how forced versus how real?
Like, no, I think they thought that was pretty funny, actually. Yeah.
I think
that was
just
real.
Like a easy mark for Rodgers, make him feel good.
Aaron is aware of everything that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
No, he would say something like that because he knows that's what he's reading, that's what he's hearing, you know, that's the talking points by people who don't like him. So he knows what's going on.
But there's something new with him. Like, first it was the ayahuasca, then it was the darkness.
Yeah,
then
but
it
that's
was
what
the...
I'm saying. He understands all that stuff. That's why he's poking fun at it.
Sure.
But I think it's forced. I think that people, Aaron Rodgers, such a big celebrity, he's still a guy that we hold in high regard, even after what he did here with the Jets, which was nothing. But when he says stuff like that and he smiles at you and you're a reporter standing right there.
Gotta laugh.
Yeah.
Good one, Aaron.
So, yeah, the answer is forced.
All right. Speaking of...
Eyes, it was. In my eyes, it's not.
All right, well, let's get your take on this. Okay. Let's check in on the Steelers ahead of a key Saturday night game against the Bengals. AFC North title still up for grabs. And, you know, George Pickens... key part, really the main piece for them on offense. I'm not sure of, but the main weapon for Russell Wilson and the Pittsburgh offense. However, apparently some awkwardness remains from the Christmas Day loss to the Chiefs. Here he was with the media yesterday.
It seemed like you and Russ weren't on the same page in that interception against the Chiefs. How does that happen, and what do you guys do to address it?
You said me and Russ wasn't on the same page?
Yeah, well, that's what he said.
That's what he said?
Yeah.
Or is that what you said?
That's what he said.
Okay.
Yeah. How do you just address that?
Thanks.
And that was the end of that.
Yeah, there's a visual component of this too, because he's got one of those
ski masks.
Things on where just basically your eyes are covered. He has the, you know, underneath, so his mouth, he could speak, and then he just takes that and puts it over his mouth, and that's where the PR person goes, all right, thanks, guys. Yeah.
So I came up with the list, in my opinion, of the biggest sports stories. Most of them are New York, but some are not New York.
Okay.
From 2024. And you tell me what you remember about it and if you think it qualifies to be on this list. And it's not a big list. I only got like 8 or 9 of them here. Okay.
Okay.
I got number one, and I start with football because it was an overtime Super Bowl on CBS. And it was, of course, the Chiefs beating the 49ers. And, I mean, it's an overtime Super Bowl, for God's sakes. We haven't seen that very often. Deserved to be on the list? And where were you when that game? Did you watch that game? Or where were you party? What's the cologne situation for the Super Bowl?
Does it deserve to be on the list?
Really?
Yeah.
Chiefs beating the Niners in overtime in a Vegas Super Bowl? No. Really?
I don't know. I didn't walk away from it like, oh, my God, I can't believe the game went to overtime. Really, really good teams. Who went the distance? I wasn't surprised by that. Where was I? I was in my house. I had a hell of a spread. Had about 40 people over. And when we do our Super Bowl.
You poo-pooed it.
I definitely did.
Damn. All right, forget it. That's off the list. All right. Do you guys agree off the list?
I would put it as an overtime. Even though it's not the first overtime
Super Bowl. It's a Super Bowl overtime.
It's a pretty great game.
Yeah, it was a great game, but it wasn't like we were surprised.
Willie's right about that part. Yeah, I expected it to be a good game.
It's like when two prize fighters go to distance and they call me negative Nelly.
Okay,
the ending also, I think when it happened, I feel like it was anticlimactic. If I remember correctly,
it wasn't. It was
fine. It's off the list. So you've made your point.
It's your list, Jerry. You can't get upset when people have opinions. You're asking.
You have this Met one, I think, lined up for me. Now I could go with a couple of others, but I will tell you, watching this game, and then I had to get in the car for this specific moment, listening to this play in Atlanta, doubleheader day, last game of the season, Mets need to get into the postseason and the playoffs, one of the biggest swings in Mets history.
Hudson ready, his first pitch to Lindor. Swinging a high fly ball, well hit right center. Harris going back, it's on the way, it is gone! End into the Braves bullpen in right center field. Francisco Lindor has an MVP moment. Whether he wins one or not, he has just put the Mets back on top, 8-7.
All right, and that was that game was crazy. Six different ways. Huge win for the Mets. Hi, I'm Howie Rose on Mets Radio. That's on the list, and I'm not even listening to you guys if you say it's not.
You can't have
take
a list.
That and shove
ask
it.
People for opinions. I'm not, take, no, no, and don't want to have feedback.
So these
I don't
three,
understand this.
I will tell you, actually, the next four, you don't get an opinion. They're on the list.
I feel like you should have vetted the list to me before you came up with the list.
I got to be honest. I'm the one here at 4 a.m. I made the list.
I could have texted you.
You could have. That's you probably still sleeping at 4 a.m. Potentially.
Schematics.
You could make a top 10 list of all baseball moments
I
from
could,
this year.
But that's not what I wanted to do.
I mean, that was significant. I mean, the Mets started horrible in April last year. They talked about selling in July.
Oh, 100%.
And for them to rally with
that
type of...
game was what... That game in and of itself was one of the most... It had so many ebbs and flows... And, oh, my God, they blew it. Oh, my God, they're oh, they blew it. You got to be kidding me. Edwin Diaz, good Lord. And it was just, it was a hell of a game. And it put them into the postseason. And Met fans everywhere were just, you know, going bonkers. I got two more Met ones because you have to keep it on this.
Are you asking for our opinions or we're just going to listen? Okay. We're just,
oh, no.
Are we strapped in? Well, because if it doesn't belong on the list.
No, because if these don't belong on the list, your opinion's stupid. All right, the next one. Take me to Milwaukee Zoo. Pete Alonso had a really difficult season, as we know. But boy, oh boy, he did had a pretty big at-bat against the Brewers.
3-1 to Alonso. Williams sets. Here's the pitch. Swing and a fly ball to right field. Pretty well hit. Freelick back at the wall. He jumps. It's gone. He did it. He did it. Pete Alonso with the most memorable home run of his career. Pumps his fist as he rounds second. It's a three-run homer. He's given the Mets a 3-2 lead. They all pour out of the dugout. Alonso on his way to home plate. They're waiting for him.
I mean, he gives you chills. Again, Howie on Mets Radio. Any thoughts, Willie? And that was pretty good.
Definitely don't have chills.
Well, you're a Yankee fan.
Yeah.
Don't worry. Your moment's coming in a second. And then the last one, obviously it ended with the losing to the Dodgers. But before that, you remember another big at-bat from Francisco Lindor in the NLDS against the Phillies.
2-1 to Lindor. Now the pitch. Swing and a drive towards the gap in right center. It's pretty deep. It's back near the wall. It's gone. It's gone. Francisco Lindor. He may have just outdone himself. He has hit a grand slam into the Phillies bullpen in right center field. The Mets are leading by a score of 4-1. They were famished for the big hit all night. And Francisco Lindor just provided a feast. Mets 4, Phillies 1 here in the sixth inning.
And no disrespect to anybody else, but the fact that Howie's on all those calls is just phenomenal. So there you go.
You don't have to say anything.
I won't. I know you're not. But I will let...
I appreciate the
have
moment.
At it with this one. So far, all kidding aside, you guys poo-pooed the... Not Mike, but you guys poo-pooed the Super Bowl. And those three baseball ones, pretty good. Now...
I'm not mad at the baseball one. The football one, I think we're all in agreement. We're just not surprised the way it ended.
In overtime. Pretty good. But that's off the list. I already crossed it off the list. Now, this one is going to be on your list.
I'm just upset that you feel like our take isn't good.
No. Well, it's fine. It's your take.
Okay.
Now, this, I know, while he's not going to be with you any longer, I understand that. This was pretty cool in the moment in Cleveland for your Yankees.
Mm.
And the 1-2. Swung on, a high fly to center. Back goes Thomas on the track. He's at the wall, and she's gone! A three-run home run. The Yankee bench comes on the field. Wow! What a Soto photo! A long, high, high fly to deep right center and out! He's wonderful. Marvelous.
That's good. So that's
a three-run blast.
Soto baby. That's good. That to me was a great Yankee
I do
moment.
Remember watching that, and I do remember my wife going, that's my mother effing Soto.
Well, he's not anymore.
Right. I remember my wife, fan. Who I turned into a Yankee fan when she arrived here in New York, and
she loves Soto. She just loved.
No, I get it.
The moxie, the flair, the Understood. Cockiness, the stare down on the pitchers. And then that shot, she jumped up. It was like, that's my mother.
That really was, man. Why, that moment was pretty,
oh, huge.
Pretty incredible. Another one on the list, but no one wants to hear about it in New York. But all kidding aside, the Freddie Freeman Grand Slam, Game 1 of the World Series for the Dodgers was a hell of a moment. That's got to be on the list. I put down just simply the name from last year, Caitlin Clark. I mean, just Caitlin Clark hysteria all over the...
Yes.
I mean, you can't tell the story of 2024 sports without her. You just
100%,
can't.
100%. As much as, you know, that woman's dream team and everything they meant for women's basketball, what Caitlin Clark was able to do this year single-handedly.
Packs every arena she's in.
She had grown men turning off whatever they love to watch to see her play.
You're 100% right. She, like, I hate to say it, but in ways bigger than the sport.
100%.
But also elevating the sport to where they're making more money, bigger TV contracts, so everybody does benefit from her success as well. The Knicks beating the Sixers in the playoffs, I thought was a... obviously, this is specific to New York, this one, because there's other great basketball moments. But them beating Philly, with or without Embiid being healthy, was it around here for sure. I know we don't talk a lot of hockey, but this stays within the whole Garden family of the Knicks and the Rangers. The Chris Kreider hat trick, when it looked like the Hurricanes were going to come back from 0-3 down, and that third period he had was unbelievable. And I know we're running out of time, but
that's fine.
The other one I had to put down here. It's a weird moment from 2024, but the same way I say you kind of can't tell the story without Caitlin Clark, Scottie Scheffler getting arrested the morning of the PGA Championship and then teeing off later in the day and playing in the event was a bizarre sports
story. Didn't they have photos of the guy on top of the car, the cop?
I think there were certain amateur videos, phone videos. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And all who was the reporter that was actually there? Was it Fowler? Somebody was there for the scene.
Oh, yeah, there were guys there.
And there was a report that, I guess, Scheffler was like, man, please help me, while the guy was getting walked away in cuffs. I think there's a video recording of that. I
mean, just bizarre.
Which is nuts.
Yes. And then I could end it. I don't know if you saw this story. Scheffler is going to miss the first handful of tournaments, I believe, because Christmas night he sliced his hand cutting food at the dinner table. I don't know if you said that kind of went under. I don't think people really saw that story. That was just the other day.
That's nuts.
Yeah, because I think he was going to be in Kapalua or wherever they play those tournaments. This used to be the Sony Open. They play the first two events in Hawaii. I think he's out of them because of his hand.
What was he, chopping cheese?
So, I don't know what he was doing, but, you know, people cutting do some stupid things. So there you go. Those are my lists of highlights and moments. You clearly didn't like all of them. I do. I thought they were pretty good. Like every sports team would do, when you win or you lose, you usually post a graphic with the score.
Sure.
So as soon as the, within minutes of the Giants winning, from the official Giants website, they've got a picture and a tweet that says, Giants win with the score, 45-33. And within minutes, I'm sitting there and I see the amount of replies, and it's going up. And my first thought is, this can't be good. Like, there's no way in the land of hate, which is essentially social media, it's just not a good place to reside.
It's not a good place to build your confidence.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I'm thinking there is no way that Giant fans are so into this win that the response numbers are going through the roof. So I decided to grab some. And I will tell you this. I grabbed them in order, and I only grabbed, I guess, about 12.
Did you have to cross out or blank out some words?
Actually, no.
Okay.
Did not. No, so they were very respectful in that regard. So I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It looks like I got 14. Out of the 14, how many do you think are positive? And there are positive ones.
5.
No. No. So here was the first one. This was from Jen O'Regan. Quote, I quit. They don't even know how to lose properly. That's fine. It's not terrible. Okay, fine. Then there's, I put my glasses on. I can't read. Then there is Charlie Quinn. All right. Charlie Quinn. Quote, absolutely nothing to celebrate about. That should be the nail in the coffin for Brian Daboll. Just lost our future quarterback today. I don't know that that's true, but okay, fine. The Clem Report posted a GIF saying, or a GIF, whatever you say, sometimes when you win, you really lose. Kevin Water. I hate you so much. I thought that one was funny. From Quez, worst run franchise in sports. From Vetch, Giants win, and now we're the biggest losers. Team can't do anything right. Stop me when I get to a positive one. One is coming, I promise you. From a guy by the name of Kevin. Not only do they screw up the lock for the number one pick, they score 45 points to lose any tiebreaker.
Ah.
Jerry, I want to have a cage match with the intern intern making these tweets. All right, so now I'm going to give you a positive one. This is from a guy by the name of Carl. Love the way they played today. History shows the number one pick is often overrated, especially for quarterbacks. Interesting he writes that because sometime this morning we're going to go over that. Have a list of those. I'd rather see a team come together and fight like they did today. First time all year, Malik Nabers smiled and had fun. Hope they take it to the Eagles next
week. Positive. I like that.
So he's going in a completely different direction.
Love that.
From Luke, I want the whole fan base to boycott this team.
Not good.
Not good. From a guy by the name of Cheddar Oates. That's his name. What can I tell you? Well, that sucks. We could have had the first pick in the draft. All of a sudden, the team wants to play competitive football. All right? Here comes another good one. And this one is interesting. Samuel writes, can't believe I'm seeing our own fans complaining about this win. No game is meaningless, and games like this will help set up a foundation of winning culture. I'm happy we won and excited to see Coach Brian Daboll continue leading this team. That's positive. I don't necessarily agree with the fact that a win like this can set a foundation because they won a game last year that didn't exactly...
Well, it just shows that they cared, right? Fair they didn't enough. Go out there and just give up. It's been ugly all season. They actually put up a fight.
They did put up a fight. Two more. From Daniel, set back the team 4 years by not losing this game for a first overall. This team did absolutely nothing right this season.
What set you back was drafting Daniel Jones.
Correct. And, well, yeah, and they did go to the playoffs, though.
They did that one time.
And then the final one from a guy that you guys are very familiar with. His name is Chris McMonagle.
Okay.
He is the overnight host here at WFAN. He fills in during the day from time to time. He has been one that has wanted this team to lose the rest of their games. He wanted control of the draft. He wanted the number one pick. He wrote, now this was not in relation to the Giants tweet. This was in relation to just his reaction to the win. I actually went and sought this out because I was curious what he wrote. And he wrote, quote, worst victory in the 100 years of Giants football.
The worst?
That's what he wrote. Worst victory in the 100 years of Giants football. So there you have that. That's a sample size, but I will tell you, as you can, there were hundreds of replies to this. As you continue going down the list of replies, this was a, I think this was a 13-2 ratio. I would say 13-2 is about right.
Yeah, like I said, listen, I've always been on the boat of saying drafting a quarterback that high is like winning the lottery.
You know, it can be.
It's extremely hard. Yep. Doesn't matter how much you dive into a guy, know everything about him. A lot of things have to work for that guy to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll see. But listen, like I said, they're not. Shadur and Cam could still fall to number
absolutely.
Four. So there's no, if you're a Giants fan, the wall isn't coming down. Like, there's still a lot to be had.
The only thing that we know is they don't have control over it.
That's it.
Right.
So I'm of the mindset, if you're a Giants fan, you could be pissed off about it. But understand, like, there's still a lot of things that, listen, we don't know the security of Daboll and Joe Sheen, right? A lot is up. So I don't know. I just rather see this Giants fans. It's hard to ask them to be patient.
It's like asking the Jet fan to be patient.
Right.
A little different.
Let this thing play out a little bit.
Here is Sonny in Malvern. What's up, Sonny? Good morning. Oh, Sonny.
Contrary to the fans' belief, I don't think this guy is falling. I think they were interested in Sanders, to tell you the truth, but I still think they're going to still have one of the top two quarterbacks, which I think both of them are not, unfortunately, franchise quarterbacks. It's a coin toss, so they might wind up with Ward, which is not a bad thing. And you can't expect the players or anybody in that building to go out there and not put forth 100% effort. So can't blame the players or the coaching staff. I think the decision for the coach has been made prior to this game anyway, guys. Your thoughts?
You might be right. I'm of the belief that he's not going anywhere. Like, I think he's coming back. I think both Shane and Daboll are coming back. I don't know that. That's just a feeling I have.
I think people don't understand that when you get a new head coach and you get a new GM, the turnover is catastrophic, right?
Well, but the Giants have done it numerous times now in the last 10 years.
Right, and it hasn't worked out for them. And also, I think as much as people see them as a package deal, I do think they're being judged individually, which is interesting in itself. So John Mara has a lot to decide, but I do, to your point, I think they're both coming back.
I don't
see them leaving.
And I think, which is something CeeLo and I were talking about last week, there's got to be something to be said for some sort of consistency. Now, if your head coach is a complete train wreck, and
meaning
the team,
like who would be a train wreck?
Well, I think Pat Shurmur at the end was. I thought Pat Shurmur, with the way he handled the media, there were a lot of. I'd have to go back and revisit all of the things we talked about at the time. I thought Joe Judge year two was a mess of a head coach.
McAdoo.
Yeah, I mean, again, McAdoo is another one. At times looked fine, and then it fell apart on him. I don't know. I know this is going to sound stupid because they're 3-13. I've never looked at Brian Daboll.
Same. I'm with you. I already know where you're at. I'm the same.
It's, again,
I never say it never looked like it was. It doesn't out of control. Too big like for a him. Circus. It just like they just had the wrong quarterback trying to lead this team, correct, along with a lot of other issues.
I don't feel like I've watched them. And again, I preface it by saying I'm well aware what the record is and what the record was last year. I get all of that, but all I can tell you is the gut feeling and the eye test. I still feel like he is a coach that has an idea of what he wants to be done on the field, but he hasn't had the guys out there that could execute it properly.
I agree.
And so if I was running this team, I would say enough with the turnover every 3 years. We're going to give this guy a chance beyond, obviously, the first
year. Yeah, and get him a quarterback he can operate with, right? Yeah. And let him pick the quarterback and let him be comfortable who's going to be that guy.
And how do you know that that guy isn't someone other than Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders? And history will tell you that, and at some point this morning, we'll go over it. There's so many examples, you know, history repeats itself, where that first pick turns out to be a whole lot of nothing or very average.
Because they're not ready.
Right.
They're not ready for the show. And that's the biggest problem. When you're drafting a guy that high, he has to be ready. And if he's not, the whole thing comes crumbling down and people become unemployed because of it.
Correct.
And so it's not easy, man. It's just not.
We know the teams that already have fired their coaches. We know the teams that are going to fire their coaches, like the Jacksonville Jaguars. There's just no way that Doug Peterson is going to survive. We don't know about the Giants, but the Giants would not be a surprise. But every year a surprise comes. Every year there is a surprise NFL firing. Mike Vrabel was the one last year. And, of course, he didn't get hired in that hiring cycle. We knew that the Belichick thing was coming to an end at that point, but him not getting a job was certainly a shocking one. So the shocking, the potential shocking firing.
Where could it
where
happen?
Where could it be? Now, if I told you Kevin Stefanski got fired, is that a shocker?
It's not a shocker. It's not his fault, but it's not a shocker. And he's a really good coach.
Yeah, there's something about Kyle Shanahan that I keep going back to. Not getting fired, but like being like, you know,
traded
like
a, or
like
something,
a, yeah,
getting out of there. I can't see that.
But that would be a shocker.
That would be a shocker. Yeah, would shocker. Gerard Mayo be a shocker?
There's been a lot of talk around that, though, now. You know what I'm saying? When I first heard it in the middle of the season, it was shocking. Like, you're not going to give this guy a full year. But now that it's been going on for weeks, it wouldn't surprise me.
Would Raheem Morris be a shocker?
Yes. That would be a shocker. Definitely. Definitely.
I mean, the way that he has mishandled, and especially the game against the Commanders, was bizarre. I don't think Zach Taylor is going anywhere. I mean, I think Joe Burrow's success offensively, you know, those two guys are buttoned up together, even though that they mishandled the end of their regulation game against the Denver Broncos.
Antonio Pierce.
Antonio, that wouldn't be a shocker to me. It wouldn't be, even though his team is playing for him. You know, I will say that. They still are playing hard for him, and he's playing with a compromised quarterback situation.
Is he going to, I mean, he's going to have to go, right? Like, Mark Davis, he's not
going to. I think it all depends. I don't know. You know, like, I felt like if they had the number one pick, Shedeur Sanders was definitely going there. That felt to me like that was going to be a match made in heaven, and maybe they will end up trading up to go get him.
Yeah.
But now things have kind of settled down. I haven't heard too much about what's going on, and you know, they obviously need a quarterback. You know, they're going to be in the market for one of these rookies, maybe, or maybe even one of these stopgap situations, or maybe they feel Aiden O'Connell is growing before their eyes, and they think that he can win.
Yeah, I mean, Raheem Morris would be a shocker to me. That's really the only one that I mean, for Arthur Blank to turn down Bill Belichick, go with Raheem Morris and fire him after 1 year. Whether they either go 9-8 or 8-9 would be...
It'd be crazy.
That right? would be crazy. But I mean, everybody else...
I mean, that team, you know, spent money on
Kirk Cousins, a lot of money on him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, when they drafted Michael Penix, I was happy with that. A lot of, I think, Falcon fans, I don't think at the time were very happy. I think they're happy now because they're seeing some of the results and how good this kid looks.
Right.
But I know that Kirk Cousins wasn't very happy about that.
Right. Well, he looked terrible, though, man.
Well, he threw for 500 yards at a game this year.
Okay, but that was an outlier.
The last 4 weeks,
he was really an outlier. He looked really bad.
He looked tired.
Yeah, and old, and like he was decaying in front of us.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, so there's a reason why they had to do it. And where he goes next year will be interesting, but he cannot go to an outdoor team.
Yeah, I can't see him. People keep saying Cleveland, because Cleveland would do with him what Pittsburgh has done with Russell Wilson. Cheap, one-year deal, no money, and come in and stabilize the franchise.
I don't know. I would not do it if I were them. He seems like a guy that he gets outside in that cold weather right now, and he can't do it anymore.
So is there a team that is in a dome that would need a quarterback or a warm weather team?
Cowboys, Dak's coming back. Detroit, no. Minnesota, no. Atlanta, no, obviously, because he's there. Saints?
Depending on what they do with Derek Carr.
Rams, no. Cardinals. Is Kyler Murray a legit trade candidate?
He may be. Jonathan Gannon may have had it with him.
That would be an interesting one. Him available.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I think he's...
He's exciting, that's for sure.
I don't think he's a bad player at all.
No, he gives you a chance to win.
Yeah.
But the question is, can he be consistent enough over 17 weeks?
Yeah, it's tough. The other thing about Kirk Cousins, too, remember when we were watching the quarterback documentary?
Yeah.
Some of this other stuff. How many hits this guy was taking?
Yes.
I mean, he was getting killed.
That's why I say the game has changed, but every the physicality week of the game hasn't changed all that much.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's certainly penalties and guys getting hit in the head. It causes penalties. But, like, he was even, like, clean hits and him just getting nailed in the chest and the ribs and just...
Right, when we played, we didn't get the do-over downs. The do-over downs are the illegal contact, the defensive holding, and the roughing the quarterback.
Yeah.
We got some of it, but we didn't... We got maybe a quarter of what the players today receive. Like, we're all sitting here at the end of these games, and when a ball is thrown, what are we all waiting for?
Flag.
Right. Because we've become conditioned to illegal contact, defensive holding, DPI.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Every single time.
Those are plays that, you know, we used to throw for 3,000 yards. Now these guys are throwing for 4,500 yards to 5,000 yards.
That's right. Yep. I mean, and all because of the physicality of the New England Patriots back in the early 2000s.
Ty Law and Marvin Harrison in the playoffs.
That's right.
And, you know, I remember we played against Hanford Dixon and Frank Minifield out in Cleveland, two of the best corners of their day. And it was basically hand-to-hand combat with those guys. And Bill Cowher was their defensive back coach.
Yeah.
Grab him. Yeah, grab. Kick him in the nuts. Do whatever you got to do.
That was Marty Schottenheimer was the head coach.
I loved Marty Schottenheimer. I had a Marty Schottenheimer thing when I was a kid. It's the weirdest thing. All right, you're gonna think I'm absolutely crazy. But
you're telling me you had a thing for Marty Schottenheimer?
I did. All right. So
I've never heard this.
It's the strangest thing. So you know the NFL films put out that Power and the Glory thing where all the songs are that we use under our picks.
Yes.
And it was a CD.
Okay.
And like in between songs, they would have, you know, guys saying stuff, you know, like the LT, go out there like a bunch of crazed dogs, you know, like all those things. So there was a Marty Schottenheimer quote that or a soundbite that was in there. And then I remember him like talking about what he meant by it. Now, I'm a young NFL fan in high school who just wants his team to win a Super Bowl so bad.
And you're impressionable right at this point, yes.
So the quote was, there's a gleam, men. There's a gleam. Go and get that gleam, all right?
Man, you remember that?
Yeah. And the gleam was the light off the shiny Lombardi. And he explained that. And to me, I was like, that meant so much to him. to get that Super Bowl. And I always rooted for him to get it.
Didn't Joe Sipp want the Rutgers Cup?
Yeah, but he won that like a ton of times.
Yeah, but I'm just
Marty
saying,
did like, not.
Didn't you have a glean off of that?
Well, why can't I have this? Why do you have to argue with me on this? This is my NFL passion, and you have to poo-poo it. I thought you'd love this.
I can't even believe that you have a thing for the great Marty Schottenheimer.
Yeah, I do. Because of that, like, the gleam of the Lombardi, and, like, they had their hands up in the air. There's a gleam, man. There's a gleam.
All right.
Let's go get that gleam, all right?
I think that's beautiful.
And then just how much that trophy and that championship meant to him and those players. Because it meant a lot to me at that point. That's like what's what I wanted as a fan. And then I thought that, you know, the passion and listening to interviews with him, and I was like, I really want that guy to win. I really, really want him to. And those Chargers teams that he had back in the day.
Yes.
Man, I used to root for those teams.
So that was, I think he had Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers, right?
Yeah. And they got the one seed 1 year, I think. They were really good.
He came after Bobby Ross out there. Am
yes,
I right?
He did. Yeah, Bobby Ross was the head coach when the Chargers
went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, with Stan Humphries. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Bobby Ross was my college coach.
I know. Head coach Bobby Ross.
Yes, right.
But yeah, I mean, I like Schottenheimer. Not as much as I love Denny Green.
Right, I know.
But I did. I had a thing for Schottenheimer.
I don't get a feel for the Giants right now. I have no idea what they're doing. The only thing I can say is that, you know, the last couple of weeks, you start reading articles by guys that are covering the team, and they're talking about the general manager staying because he has the plan, and nowhere to be found is the coach's name in the article. You know, and I feel like there's a separation between the two, and it has started over the last 2 weeks, and they're going to find themselves in a really weird situation because as I was looking over the list of quarterbacks, let's face it, they're not trading up to get somebody and giving up half their draft in next year's first round. I would not do that.
No.
Not for any of these guys. I mean, like I think that they can play in the league. I just don't think that they're worth these high picks, no matter how desperate you are for a quarterback. Go out and find somebody else. Go out and find a Carson Wentz. Go out and find a Kirk Cousins. Go find somebody that's going to be cheap and is going to be a stopgap and worry about next year or the year after that. I don't see anybody on this board right now that is worth like what it would take to go up and get them, because people value that first or second overall pick because they feel like they need to fill a void at the most important position. And I know that there are guys that now, as we get ready to transition into the phase where we start evaluating and the NFL starts evaluating these players, I don't necessarily feel like there's an explosive player in the draft that is going to be a difference maker within the next 2 years. So let's just say they end up, you know, getting Cam Ward somehow, some way. You know, is he going to be Jaden Daniels and C.J. Stroud, or is he going to be Anthony Richardson?
Right.
And is he going to be ready to play in an NFL game? Like, is he going to be able to read the NFL defenses that are so much different than the college defenses?
All right, so that brings up an interesting point. Because the situation is what it is in the draft, and at the top of the draft, you don't even like the quarterbacks. And I think the consensus is this is not like last year.
No, it's not even close.
Right. So, all right, so you got that part of it. Now you have the part of it where the Giants may not even have an opportunity to draft those guys, even if they love them. Does the situation that they're in contribute to whether or not they stay or not? Meaning that if they had the number one overall pick and Caleb Williams were there, you'd be like, you know what? I want Brian Daboll and Caleb Williams to work together. I'm going to keep Brian Daboll. You understand what I'm saying? It's a little bit of a...
It's so complicated, and there's so many variables that go into the decision-making of John Mara in this situation, because if they draft a young quarterback and somehow they get up to the number one pick or with the number two pick, and they are 0-7 next year, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, yeah, what happened to Matt Eberflus?
Exactly is what's going to happen. And, yeah, you know, and I think we've definitely highlighted that and spoke about that. And, you know, do you think that Brian Daboll wants to work in another young quarterback? And I know he wants to keep his job, and I know it's a job that you know, that every, you know, a million guys would love to have. But in reality, the losing takes its toll. And a guy like Brian Daboll, you know, unfortunately, they're the fall guys. You know, I've seen my friend go through it twice. So I know exactly what these guys put into it, how hard they work, and how shortchanged they are when their quarterback position is in a state of flux. And if you don't have that right guy, that difference-making guy that's at that position that you believe can run a team for 17 games and stand up and take the beating that is required in order to become one of the best in the league, I mean, you don't have a chance. And I did look at, you know, who the Giants are playing next year.
Yeah.
I mean, they're playing the gauntlet of teams next year. It's ridiculous who they're playing. Now, every year is different. We know that.
Mm.
But at least on paper going into next year, I would sit here and tell you that we're going to see the Giants at the top of the draft again next year. So how are the fans going to deal with that?
Well, right, think about it. Right, the only way that it's going to feel right that Joe Shane and Brian Daboll stay is if they draft a quarterback and the guy is great. Like you said the name before, Jaden Daniels. That's the only way it's going to feel right that they stayed, because all these other scenarios, I guess there's another one. There's another one that could happen I think is very unlikely.
If they trade for J.J. McCarthy, is that?
Well, right. They either get a guy like that or they bring in a stopgap guy that ends up being really efficient at that position.
Kind of like Sam Darnold this year or Baker Mayfield.
Right,
for
and
the
then
Bucks.
The defense figures it out. Neighbors, maybe they draft another offensive weapon, and then all of a sudden they're a little more competitive.
Or they sign a free agent offensive weapon.
Right, but I don't see that happening, quite honestly.
I feel like I kind of feel like at the moment we're sitting here right now that they're in a dead end.
Yeah.
You know, and they're at a dead end because, you know, they sank or swam with Daniel Jones. They let Saquon Barkley go. He runs for 2,000 yards, becomes that gold jacket guy that Dave Gettleman said he was going to be.
Mm.
They've had numerous injuries, failures in the draft.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, and I'm not, I want them to win. I want them to do well. It's easier for us to cover teams when they're winning. Like the Knicks right now, turn on the mic, start talking glorious about the Knicks and their 9-game winning streak and the fact that they're playing a team that's won 14 in a row. And you got yourself, you know, a mid-season championship potential.
Yeah, it's funny you say the Knicks, because I was going to make that comparison to when all those years where they were in absolute NBA purgatory and closer to hell than anywhere else, where you felt like there's no way out. There's no way out. Like, all right, we have the one of the three worst records. Okay, you didn't get the number one overall pick. All right, you got this guy. And then all of a sudden, you're too good to get one of the top picks. And then there's nobody in the draft. And then you draft this guy, and then he stinks. And then Giannis gets picked behind. And, like, there was no way out. You were stuck in one of these escape rooms with no escape. And then finally it happened after years and years and years. Feels like the Giants are in that situation right now.
100% it does. And because there is no leading answer right now for them. You know, they do have some really good players on the roster. They do. When they're all healthy, there are some top-end players, and so it's not the void of total talent. But what it is missing, it's missing the playmaker at quarterback. And you can't sit here and tell me that Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, Jalen Milroe, Carson Beck, any of these guys that are coming out this year at this moment are the answer to a 9-win season next year. I mean, next year, if they have a rookie quarterback and people think he's going to play and turn this season or turn this thing around, they got another thing coming.
Yeah.
Let's look at reality here and try to figure out Joe Shane is going to, if he is here, they're going to have to be really creative and really aggressive. And the reason being is because I could just hear it. Like in the middle of next season, they're 1-7. Oh, here we go again. This franchise, they suck. Get rid of the owner. Get rid of it. I mean, I could just hear it all over again.
Yeah, and then you put that quarterback in that horrible position that we've seen the Jets put a couple of guys in, where there's coaching changes, their offensive coordinator changes, there's everything. And then, you know, that's what you got with the Chicago Bears right now. And I don't know if they're going to hang on to the offensive coordinator that they promoted.
Oh, they're getting rid of those guys. They're cleaning house.
Right. So then now you're talking about a Caleb Williams going into his second season is going to have his third offensive coordinator.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. So that's something that you got to think about. you know, if you draft that quarterback. Now, they're also going to have pressure on them to draft a quarterback like that. They might have to, because of where they are, just have to do it.
Because
how the hell, like, what's the alternative at this point?
It would have to be a stopgap guy.
And then you
trade down and you get more assets is what you do. And you be realistic about what you're trying to do here.
Do you do that with this regime or another regime?
But that's the point. I mean, like, this regime right now needs to win. And they're not going to win next year if you're telling me that they are going to draft reach for a quarterback in the first round and throw him out there week one in the NFL season.
Yeah, I mean,
are you going to tell me?
No.
There is no Jaden Daniels. And by the way, we were watching offseason Hard Knocks. What player did Brian Daboll say, go get?
Jaden Daniels.
Right. So he knows, like, he knows.
Yeah.
He knows better than we know. He knows better than all the fans out there know. He knows who the players are that he thinks he can win with. And he needs, like, whoever it is, can you see another season where they are picking first, second, third, or fourth, fifth next year in the draft?
Of course. I mean, I think that's the most likely situation.
But I'm just saying, with this regime or this coaching staff,
I did think only fair and fitting. You know, I know it's only December 31st. I know it's not the NBA playoffs. I know that the NFL is king right now, and the Juan Soto story, you know, basically captured New York for weeks and weeks until he made a decision.
It ruined my life.
It ruined your wife?
My life.
Oh, your life.
No, it did. I'm
Juan Soto?
Being drastic.
Juan Soto.
Dramatic Yankee fan.
Well, they've done fine. So there's been a lot going on, and I don't even want to say they've been flying under the radar, because that's not even fair to them either. But not enough attention is being given to the Knicks. Now, I know it's about winning championships, but I will always tell you, if you don't enjoy these games as they're happening in the season, as it's happening, why even bother watching? They are, and not a great schedule in December, but they took advantage of it. They did what they were supposed to do. You look up all of a sudden, and the Knicks got out to not the best of starts. They're 23-10.
Yeah.
They're right on the Celtics' heels. If not for the Cavaliers playing stupid basketball, you could make the case that the Knicks would be challenging for the top spot in the conference as we sit here and turn the calendar to 2025. And what, for me, when I watch them, what's impressive about them is it's not one guy. It's not all about defense anymore, because that's what I thought it was last year. The balance that they have struck on this team, from Brunson, who can go for 10 points and give you 15 assists and you get 40 points from Karl-Anthony Towns, or I don't know, the other night they need offense and Brunson goes for 55.
Gave him the double nickel.
Josh Hart last night, the triple-double. You've had big contributions from a guy like Deuce McBride this season. They are just, and we know this, but they are really good. And last night's win, expected, but a tight game at the half, and they kind of, you know, blow right past Washington in the second half like we thought they would. But 23-10.
Yeah, I mean, to finish the month of December 12-2 is indicative to a team that's just flat out playing and they like each other. I think the people on there,
chemistry.
Chemistry matters, man, especially when you got to go on the road and play tough teams. But I think you hit it right on the head. The fact that last year it seemed like we had to live and die with defense and Jalen Brunson. That's not the case this year. And the fact that he can go give you, you know, 55 points, and then last night I think he had 18 for something.
Mm-hmm.
So it just shows you that, you know, I think it just takes the ease off him, right? There was a lot of talks about him being an MVP, but not, even part of being an MVP is not just about what you're capable of, how much your team can back you up if you have an off night. Between Big Cat, I think he had 32, between Josh Hart, they're rebounding really well. You're still getting defense out of them. They're running the floor. And I don't know when this became a thing, and maybe you know, but we normally say, like, you know, players, they play both ends of the floor. Like, that's your job. You got to score. You got to defend. These guys do it effortlessly, and I'm happy that the Knicks are finally worthy of talking about.
No, they are.
The circus that used to be the New York Knicks is gone.
It certainly seems like that. And the Mikal Bridges, and I didn't see you or talk to you after the Christmas Day game when they beat San Antonio. But, you know, we're talking about Brunson and Towns and Hart and maybe OG Anunoby. Well, that was a day where you needed somebody to go head-to-head with Victor Wembanyama, and Mikal Bridges stood tall and played out of his mind on Christmas Day. And when Wembanyama would make one of these 35-foot threes, It was like, Bridges, give me the ball. And he was feeling it right from the start of that game. And it just, to me, goes to...
41 that game, right?
Yeah, he went for over 40. And it just showed me the scoring depth that they have. It's not just Jalen Brunson and or Towns. It's on any given night. They've got like five different guys that can just light it up for 30, 40-plus. And I'm not saying they're winning an NBA championship, but I would say this is
as good an opportunity as they've had in a long time. Positive mojo out there.
Well, but they deserve that. Now, it's funny because the season's long, and who knows where we are in April. The 76ers got out to a horrid start. Yeah. All of a sudden, you look up the way I'm still saying the Knicks are 23-10. You look up, the Sixers still have a way to go, but the Sixers are starting to look more like the 76ers. What's impressed me so far through these first couple of months is how Cleveland hasn't really had that step down yet. Mm. Like, they have played at an elite level every step of the way. Now, can they continue that? I have no idea. But so far, they've been very impressive. Boston's been good. I think the East, when we get there, your top four or five teams, I actually think any of those four or five teams would be capable of winning a championship.
When only one team matters to this.
Well, for you here, and I understand that. But, I mean, you look at, I mean, then CBS Sports Network has the graphic up. You've got the Cavs, the Celtics, the Knicks, those three for sure. You can never discount the Bucks. And to me, if the Sixers get in the postseason, which I think they will, you look up, they're 13-17 now. When they started, what were they, 2-10 or something like that? It was crazy.
Well, that was because of the health of Embiid.
That was certainly
which I believe, you know, there's his knee will never be right. Like, he doesn't have a meniscus. That knee, night in, that gets sore. You know, listen, I think our team is scrappy good, to your point. They're fighting. But the fact that the Knicks are in third right now, 12-2 in the month of December, we have a balanced team. Tibbs seems like, I don't think I've ever seen Tibbs smile, but he's at least smirked a couple times on the sideline.
How could you not?
And, like, it feels good. It feels good to be a Knicks fan. And I thought this team was going to take a big drop once we lost Hartenstein, because he was just the heart and soul of the team last year, was ability to hit the boards and play defense. But they've been great. Cat's been good. He's playing defense, scoring. We're doing everything we need to do to win games. It just feels good. I just want to say, I hate to feel this good and feel disappointed when it matters. That's what scares me.
Understood. And that comes back to the conversation about winning the championship and holding the trophy at the end. But I would tell you to enjoy this as best you can, because you never know injury, when it ends, yes. Who knows. But that having been said, they're off to a really nice start now through 33 games. 33 games? Something like that.
Something like that.
23-10. And you've got Mitchell Robinson expected to
be back.
Later in the month of January, of course, if not maybe early February. Now, you have now added defensive depth. And that's, if there's one question I've had about them this year, and it's a minor question, but it would be, like we've discussed, I think last week, and maybe it was with CeeLo, will they be able, that's the one thing they haven't done this year that they did last year. They have not defended like they did last year. Last year, they were one of the best defensive teams in the league. And I know CeeLo brought up the stats, they're not all that different. But to me, the eye test is they're not playing the same defensively, but we know they're capable of it. Can they turn that switch on and continue to produce offensively like they are, and then clamp down defensively on the other team?
Well, I think a big defensive identity for us is OG, right? His ability to guard the perimeter, and he can guard any big because he has that strength in the post. Overall, I think it's just a collective effort. I think that's one thing when we look at the Knicks last year, and they had such a, when you talk about the product on the floor, they were grit, they were grimy, they hit the boards. You talk about Josh Hart, you talk about everything that he brought to the table. I think the Knicks right now defensively, when you bring in Mitchell Robinson, I think you're talking about added balance, mm-hmm. right? Now the pressure isn't on Precious all the time to get down and get scrappy. You're not talking about Big Cat have to fight all the time. And Mitchell just adds a sense of identity to paint they just need, right? Especially if you want to make that long run after the All-Star break.
I completely agree. So they're fun to watch. It's worth your time. Real quick, just a couple of other NBA notes just while we're on the basketball. Did you see by any chance, this one hurts me.
What happened?
And I know he's not wrong. Did you see the comments from Dorian Finney-Smith?
I did not.
Did you see it, Zoo?
I don't want to lie to you.
Oh, I saw him.
Yeah, I figured you did. So he did his little media session with the Lakers, with the LA media. And they asked him about playing in Brooklyn. And he talked about how when you play for Brooklyn, you know you're the little brother or whatever the hell he said. Huh. And
it's not
now,
lying.
I know, but I'm a Nets fan. And I just said to you, it hurts me to hear that, even though I know it's true, for a guy to say that. Like, we've always wondered. So So, like, D'Angelo Russell was here.
Yes.
He goes out, and he's been in other places. He gets traded back here now. And I've always wondered, like, what are they thinking as they're on the plane heading back here to play for a Nets team that right now is not very good? They are clearly not trying to win because they want to get one of those top few picks, even though they've done a lot of harm in that way because they've won too many games so far. Like, are you just miserable coming here knowing that you're playing? Now, they get fans in terms of that building. Like, they draw.
I've been to a couple of Nets games. I'm always surprised that there are a lot of people in the stadium.
100%.
It looks like a fashion show sometimes. I think the Knicks have the star power. The Nets kind of have, like, this urban, more younger, more vibrant.
The problem I would say for the Nets and the Net fan is I don't know what type of fan is in that building. Meaning, when I go to a Knicks game, here's what I know.
Wall Street's in the building.
I know the lower bowl is going to be filled with Wall Street. I know you're going to have celebrities on the court. But I also know the upper tier is
the full real New Yorkers.
Of diehard Knicks fans.
Yes, the real New Yorkers.
I don't know. I've only been to Barclays Center 3 times for Net games. It's just not an easy place for me to get to, and I watch a lot of the games on TV. But the few times I've been there, I wouldn't say a fashion show, but I do look around, and I feel like there's more just basketball fans that are there, people that are in New York. It's a thing to do. I don't feel like I've got diehards all over the place.
There's no culture. That's what you're asking
for. Trying to build. But it takes time, and leads me back to the conversation of when guys get traded to come play here, what do they think?
I'm not going to be here long. This is a stopgap. I mean, that's the honest to God truth.
That's a tough way to build a program.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I was only interested in the Nets from a casual fan standpoint is when they had KD, Kyrie, and Harden, right?
And even then, they didn't take over the city. That's remarkable. True. Now, they had the run, and they were clearly better than the Knicks. There's not even a question about it, and they beat the crap out of the Knicks every time they played the Knicks. But the problem was you needed those guys to be here for 8 or 9 years.
And win.
And do that consistently to start getting the young fan to be a Met. Now, I will tell you, it's interesting because growing up as a Net fan in really Knickland, you know, everything growing up was Patrick Ewing. It was John Starks. It was even for a few of my older friends. I would say.
You're talking the time like the Knicks had DC and Kenny
So for
you're
me,
talking about during that era.
The Kenny Anderson, Derek Coleman time is when we used to go to the Meadowlands all the time with Drazen Petrovic back then. Yep. But, you know, I grew up with all these Knick jerseys around me. Even, you know, I was going to say my older friends like Bernard King. I mean, you saw those jerseys everywhere. When my kids started playing basketball during the Durant and Irving time just a few years ago, all you saw around the local gyms were black Net jerseys with the Durant 7. And you saw a lot of Kyrie. The Knick jersey, I'm not going to say it was gone. That's not fair. But I will tell you that the Durant jersey was the premier jersey that you would see. They needed them to be here for a length of time to actually start to build something. It didn't work out. It didn't happen. And now they're starting ground up again.
Yeah, I think some of that star power kind of went out the window when Kyrie kind of went on his political thing. You know, that all happened.
Well, sure. I mean, we've had this conversation. If the pandemic doesn't happen, they might still be here winning.
Right, but I'm saying as far as likability, they lost a lot of that, right? Sure. Like when your stars are hard to like because of sometimes their own views, that pulls the attention out of the building, right? Like
it does, but if you win. To me, it's like anything. If you win, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
The Knicks are not only likable for what they're able to do on the court. These guys have podcasts. They have a social media image, right? Like they're connecting to a younger generation who are in love with streaming and posting things. Like these guys are into that as well. On top of fashion, when Big Cat got here, man, in Valley, he's a Jersey kid, and I know he has Dominican roots. And like you, Zoo, you can maybe attest to this. Like if you talk to a lot of guys in the Heights, in Washington Heights, that is, which is a huge Dominican population, they look at Cat as like the guy now. Like it's cool to be Cat, right? Like he's wearing the Keith clothing. He's showing a Diplomat sign, which is a rap group. I don't know if you're familiar.
Not a clue.
Okay. Anyway, he's very much entrenched with the hip hop culture and urban culture, right? Like That's huge for a lot of young kids who maybe not be avid basketball fans, but they have a guy who that they can attach themselves to, right? The Nets never had that. At one point, they did with KD.
Yes.
With Kyrie. Agreed. But all that kind of went out the window to a lot of other reasons. Pandemic, social views, yada, yada, yada.
But I will tell you, so it's interesting on the podcast thing that you're talking about. You are right, because as a non-Knick fan, I happen to enjoy watching the Brunson and Josh Hart podcast. That Roommates podcast or show on YouTube to me is phenomenal. And you get a great look at the relationship. They bring in their teammates nonstop. They brought in Rick Brunson to kind of clear the air about what went on in the preseason with Dante DiVincenzo. Like, there's a
Which
lot.
Which was nothing.
Oh, no, it was nothing. But it was they had
it was
that
something
platform.
That they showed
to, and then once they got through that, they started talking about him and his son. It was really cool. It's a different way to see it and absorb it. That said, you know, Durant did that boardroom. Was it boardroom? Is that what it's called? The boardroom podcast
with,
on YouTube.
Kleiman. Yeah.
Which was a really cool look into him, too. So he did connect in that regard, and he's got tons of subscribers on his channel as well. And, you know, Durant is the type that if he's on your team, you love him. And if you're a basketball fan, you love him. But if you're a hardcore fan of another team, you can't stand him.
Sure.
And you think he's soft and he bounces from team to team to team. And yet I would watch him on YouTube, and you could tell he doesn't care the jersey. He just wants to play basketball. And whether that's good, bad, indifferent,
you can't have that attitude in this city. Different market.
Agreed. Yeah. I do agree. My point is, he did have that outlet the same way the Knicks do it now. And had he remained here and made the Nets his team, and even if Kyrie wants to go, like, we're still going to win, and continued with that platform, I think he could have done the same thing given time.
I also think he didn't want to stomach that. I don't think he wanted that challenge.
Clearly.
Right.
You're right.
I think some guys, like when Brunson got here, and there was so much talk about, like, we're really giving this kid all this money coming from Dallas? Like, we get it. He's tough. You know, he's a Villanova kid. But he embodied New York. Like, he was tough.
Yeah.
He was scoring night in and night out. Like, he was playing defense. He was rallying guys. He was emotional. He was, like, it seemed like he had this David versus Goliath type mentality. And New York was like, yeah, that's what we're about. Like, New Yorkers, you got to understand, New Yorkers, we're nostalgic by default. We hold on to that blue cup of coffee that we walk to work with, right? Those are the guys we celebrate. And so when you come in with that attitude and that mantra, we're like, all right, he's one of us. He gets it. But if you come into it like, man, I'm just here to ball, everybody's like, well, okay, well, leave. You know, like, that's not what we're into.
It goes to show, too, that when you're, whether it's free agency, making trades, drafting players, like, it's everyone's got talent. At this level, they all have talent. It's kind of what's inside and how much do you care?
100%.
And it's hard to get inside people's heads.
And New Yorkers, we see it right away. Like, we watch. We're always watching how you move, how you talk, you know, the effort you put in, the effort you don't put in.
Yep.
We're watching it all.